Okay, we're going to talk this morning about an interesting book called A Course in Miracles. Not the Course in Miracles, but A Course in Miracles. Insinuating that it is a course, maybe not the only one. And one of the things a course does is it says there's many different avenues to obtain liberation, and this is just one. But it says because of a universal crisis of some kind, that the Course in Miracles was designed to shorten the time of our liberation and our return back to the presence. Well, the term it uses is there's a celestial speed-up necessary. And this is why it says A Course in Miracles was given, because a celestial speed-up was required because of circumstances that have developed. It says there's many different courses. In other words, all the spiritual teachings out there emphasize, you know, to be a good person, love your neighbor, forgive your neighbor, and that type of thing. They all have core essences in them that will lead us back home. But one of the things the Course says is some will take us faster than others. And the Course kind of gives us the idea that this is the fastest way to get back home of anything that's out there. But the others will lead us there, but the Course in Miracles is designed to save time. Matter of fact, one of the things it says that if you follow the teachings, you will collapse time, it says. So you have time from A to B and B to C and so on. And so in these segments, it can just collapse the time. And this is what it calls a miracle. The Course in Miracles isn't about miracles like we read in the Bible, like parting the Red Sea or Jesus healing lepers. And that's not even classified as a miracle. The Course in Miracles classifies that type of stuff as magic. He says this is magic stuff. He says the true miracle is connecting with your true Christ within, the true Spirit. And when this connection is made, it says that time can collapse. And so it shortens the time between our journey here as a prodigal son and our return home. And so that's the basic messages. So A Course in Miracles isn't about a course of how to walk through walls and that type of thing. It's about connecting with Spirit. And when you connect with Spirit, that's what it considers a true miracle for us, is making that connection. Now, you know, this is kind of the purpose of building the molecule also. When the molecule is created successfully, then it will collapse time, so we will have a much stronger connection with Spirit. So building the molecule would be considered a true miracle, as the Course in Miracles defines miracles.
So does the Course in Miracles then teach us how to be receptive to the overshadowing?
It doesn't talk anything about the overshadowing.
But you said connection outside to Spirit.
Outside the Course, the author of the Course claims to be Jesus. Now, whether it is or not, or just a high entity representing the Christ energy. There's a lot of different opinions as to who the real author is. But when you read the Course, it sounds like it's Jesus claiming to be Jesus, you know. But students are not in agreement with that. Some people think it's just from the Christ consciousness of the scribe. Others think it was the real historical Jesus. Others think it's just a Christ energy, or possibly some other high entity.
But they're trying to do the same thing that we're trying to do, and that's connect to spirit.
Yeah.
So by reading the book, then wouldn't that help us all?
That's the idea, yeah, is to help you get closer to spirit. Tells you there's definitely things in the book that are helpful to you connecting closer to spirit. And it gives you 365 lessons, one a day, that will bring you a step closer. And I followed that format when I wrote my treatise on soul contact, Seeker's Guide to Soul Contact, and have 365 lessons on there how to get closer to soul contact. Now, what soul contact, reaching that level, in the Course in Miracles, it's called reaching what they call the real world, because there's a step. They say we're in this material world, which it calls a dream, and then the next step up is the real world, where you see things as they really are, but you aren't in the highest sphere yet. And then there's where you go to return to home, which is, they call heaven. And so you have these three steps. Now, the real world is where the person achieves soul contact, sees things as they really are. And the real world is also in the kingdom after death. It's not the final step, but it's in between. But one of the problems of A Course in Miracles is the language is so much different than like esoteric things like the Tibetan and Blavatsky and these type, the esoteric writers. It uses entirely a different terminology, but it says something very similar if you read between the lines of the principles that are actually being taught. So hardly any Course in Miracles people read the Tibetan or Theosophy type stuff, and hardly anyone in Theosophy studies the Course in Miracles, but they're both quite popular, but they're in two different camps. It's interesting that they both see each other. The esoteric people see Course in Miracles as being too simplistic. They read a little bit of it, say they're just saying the same thing over and over, but really it isn't. Yeah, every line in it just about has something hidden in between the lines. It does say emphasize certain things over and over, but even when it emphasizes something over and over, it gives additional insights as you read on. It has a lot of things in there that you miss on the first reading. I know I missed a lot on my first reading of the course, and now I've really gotten into it. I really appreciate the intelligence behind it. There's a lot more behind it than meets the eye, and people that have just dabbled into it miss a tremendous amount. And so we're going to go over some of those things.
Who channels it?
We'll go into this in my. I've outlined a few things, and that's one of the things we're going to cover. But the basic message of the course, one of the great quotes, and it was channeled by Helen Schuckman. But what was interesting about that is she received it in the same way Alice A. Bailey received hers. Now, most channelers go into a trance state. And oftentimes, probably over two-thirds of the time, what they channel in the trance state, they don't remember anything when they come out of the trance. It was another entity comes in and speaks to them. The Tibetan says this method is quite unreliable and it's not used by the hierarchy. And he says the only time they'll use the trance channel is if there's some emergency or something that they have to deliver a message and there's no other way. But outside of that, they ignore this. And he says, pretty much astral entities use this, and some of the stuff they say may be okay, and some of it may not be that accurate. But what Alice A. Bailey, the way she received hers is by mental telepathy. And by mental telepathy, she began hearing the Tibetan's voice and asked her to write it down, and she reluctantly did so at first. And then, but she wrote it down word for word, what the Tibetan gave her. And then as they progressed, after about 10 years or so, their minds became so united that she could, like, read his mind and get impressions from his mind, what he wanted to write, and she would write it down that way. She didn't need him to actually dictate it word for word. But then after she wrote it down, he told her whether or not he approved of it. And she said, sometimes they argued that Tibetan wanted to word it one way and she wanted to word it another way, you know, and they went back and forth, finally reached agreement as to the best way to word it. Now, with Helen Schuckman, it was quite similar. And it's interesting how many intuitives are named Helen. We have Helen Schuckman with A Course in Miracles. Helena Blavatsky wrote The Secret Doctrine. Helen Roerich wrote all kinds of revelations from the masters on into the Russians. And so we have the word, the name Helen shows up so many times there. It's interesting. But anyway, Helen Schuckman, she was a psychologist and teaching at, I believe, University of Cornell or something like that, or working there. Had a fairly prestigious job. She was raised a Jew, but gravitated toward atheism, so she wasn't even a standard Christian or anything. And one day she heard this voice, and the voice says, "This is A Course in Miracles. Please take notes." And she thought, "What?" And she looked around and thought, "Well, what the heck is this? You know, am I going crazy?" So it said it several times. So she said, "Okay, I'll take some notes." So she took some notes, and she showed it to her assistant that she was working with. She showed him the notes, she told him, she says, "Man, I heard this voice, I think I'm going crazy." He says, "Well, what did it say?" And she says, he was the one that told her to take the notes to begin with. He says, "What did it say?" She says, "I don't know, it just told me to take notes." And so she took the notes. That's what inspired her to finally write it down, was his encouragement. And she showed it to him, and then he read these words. These were the first words. "Nothing real can be threatened. Nothing unreal exists. Herein lies the peace of God." And he read that, and he thought, "Wow, that's pretty profound." And then he read the rest of it, and he says, "This is good stuff." He says, "Keep taking the notes. Let's see what it says." And so the guy became Bill Thetford was the name, I remember now. He really encouraged her to continue taking the notes, and so she took the notes, and he says the voice came so fast that she had to write it down in shorthand, because she had a hard time writing it down, because when the words came, the words came really fast. So she wrote it down just as fast as she could, and she had to use some shorthand. And then after she wrote it down, Bill then typed it up, and as close as he could get to with her. Then she read over the typing to make sure everything was master shorthand. And so they worked on that for, about 4 years, I think, altogether. When they finished the text, they thought they were done, and he said, "No, we got another part to the course to come," and then they give the workbook next, and then the final one was the manual for teachers. And so it was finally finished, I believe it was around, 1978 or something. And I bought my first edition in 1980. It was a big three-volume set. It was quite expensive at the time, but they've got it reduced to one volume now, and it's a lot cheaper. You can get actually download the text free different places now on the Internet just for the text.